Welcome to Keys of the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and I'm going to talk to you about the kingdom of God, and I'm going to tell you all the stuff that you've been missing about the kingdom of God. What is this kingdom of God stuff? Israel was in bondage in Egypt. And they got into bondage because they betrayed their brother. They didn't care about their brother. They were jealous, envious. They didn't like the fact that their brother was the favorite of their father. And so they actually were thinking about killing him, but they ended up, fortunately for them, they didn't kill him, but they sold him into bondage. They sold him to their cousins. And then they sold him into Egypt. But he remained true and faithful, and he ended up rising up to being one of the most powerful men in Egypt. But Egypt wasn't a government like it was going to become. Egypt was a nation. People had, some people were wealthy, some people were poor, some people helped each other out. But people were somewhat free in Egypt. There wasn't, slavery was never really popular in Egypt because the Israelites weren't really slaves in Egypt, if you use the word slaves in a particular context. They were part of what they call a corvée system of statutory labor. They had to pay tribute. And that meant they 20% of everything they did during the year, their income from their labor had to go to the government of Pharaoh. That's what ended up having happened after the famine. Before the famine, that wasn't the case. Before the famine, the Pharaoh was just a really rich guy. He probably had servants, which are more like employees. They worked for him. And, you know, he had money. He had land. And Joseph ended up working for him. And he was really popular with the people, so he was this leader. But after the famine, the people had all joined this welfare system set up by Pharaoh, where you could come to the government and they would feed you in time of famine, and in exchange you sold yourself. Your lands ended up belonging to Pharaoh, but he put you back on the land because he's not going to farm it all himself, so he puts you back on. But you were back on the land with a legal title, which legal title doesn't mean you had any right to the beneficial interest of the land. Still doesn't mean that you have it. You know, I was just telling somebody the other day, a guy invited us out to eat, and we sat there, and I told him, legal title, everybody thinks I own this land, I got a legal title. You look up the definition, legal title is an apparent title that carries with it no beneficial interest. You don't own the land, because you don't own the beneficial interest. The beneficial interest is the right to use the land. You think you own the land, then how come when you stop paying the use tax for just a year or two, they take the whole land away from you, they sell the land to somebody who will pay the tax, and you don't get any of the money. In many states, you don't get a dime. Some states you might get a little bit after they cover all their expenses, which means very little for you. And all you have to do is be, you know, a year or two behind on your taxes. Why? How can they do that? Because you don't own the land. You have legal title. That's not why Americans came here. They came to own the land. Now, you want to change that? Well, you got to change. Because that's the way it is because you have been jealous and envious and covetous of your brother. And so you have gone into bondage. Because you wanted your brother to have to pay into benefactors who exercise authority so you could have benefits. Free education, free health care, take care of my parents and Social Security, you know, Medicare, Medicaid, Obamacare. You wanted all these things. Now, some of you didn't want some of these things because this kind of got out of hand, but you wanted some of those benefits. And because you wanted some of those benefits, you went into bondage. You were willing to take a bite out of your neighbor, and so you went into bondage. Now, you should feel really guilty about that. You should feel really bad about that. You should feel really repentant about that. But you probably even didn't realize that that was the case. You sold your brother into bondage, and you yourself went into bondage. Now, are you going to be in bondage for 400 years like the Israelites? You've been in bondage for almost 100 years. You might get out of bondage around 1927 if you work really hard, or you may just die. Because that's your options. You know, because there's a huge test coming. And you need to get right with God. Now, you go down to those churches that make you feel good. You know, those preachers that tickle your ears, tell you you're saved because you think a thought or say a phrase. You're toast. You're going down the tubes with Egypt. When the decline and fall of the Roman Empire, which you see coming, actually hits, you're going down with it. Because you haven't repented yet. You think you're a Christian. You ain't. Because you ain't following Christ. And I've been showing that in the last couple of shows, and I'm going to keep doing that. You know, we talked just in the last show a little bit about the fact that this whole idea of putting people in jail for mandatory sentences. I mean, you can actually go to jail for suspicion now. Isn't that amazing? You know, that was the law that Tiberius passed at the time of Christ. You could be arrested for suspicion and go to jail just because they suspected you. That's actually law today in America. They can take all your land away from you. They can take your ranch, the whole thing it's unfair, it's unjust, but you're not dealing with justice courts. You're dealing with a legal system. I mean, you could actually have professors in college get after you if you start talking about what's fair. It's not about what's fair, it's about what's legal. That's why she wears a blindfold. She's not interested in what's fair. That's why you can, for the Hammonds are in jail for 5 years apiece. That's why, the cases I was mentioning earlier today, Lewis Ewing, who is in jail for stealing. He's in jail for 50 years. 50 years he's in jail for stealing 9 videotapes, children's videotapes, from a Kmart. Got 50 years for that. Legal system. You know, he had done things wrong before, and he had been arrested before, and he had done time for him before. But because it was 3 strikes you're out, he's doing 50 years for stealing 9 videotapes. Is that cruel and unusual punishment? Well, according to the courts, not. No, that's okay. That's fine. You know, another guy's doing life for 3 golf clubs. Another guy got life, or 25 years to life, for stealing a piece of pizza. Now, should they have stolen? No. Should they get life for it? No. If you think they should, boy, wait till you do something wrong. But the fact is what's really going on. People get upset. Well, that's not fair that guy goes to jail for that, you know. You know what's not fair? When you sent that guy to jail for 50 years, that's going to cost the taxpayers $0.5634 million for stealing 9 videotapes. Citizens of the state of California are going to have to shell out $1.5 million. And actually, as I went out and explained, that it's probably going to be more than that because they appealed this all the way up to this 9-court tribunal that said that that's okay. Why do they say that's okay? Because the prison industry is a $40, $50 billion business. They want lots of prisoners in there. Every prisoner is big bucks for somebody. Not for you guys, not for you stupid taxpayers. Now, when I say stupid taxpayers, I'm not saying you're stupid for paying the taxes. I'm saying you're stupid for not walking in the ways of Christ. You should pay the taxes. You deserve to pay the taxes. You've been absolute idiots. You did not do what Christ said. You said you were a Christian. If you're a Jew, you didn't do what Moses said, because Moses said the same thing. If you're a Muslim, you didn't do what Moses said. I have to say Moses. I can't say Muhammad, but Muslims recognize Moses as a prophet of God. They recognize the 10 Commandments, but you ain't doing them. You've been coveting your neighbor's goods. through the agency of men who exercise authority. You've been selling your brothers into bondage so you could have benefits, and so you should be in bondage. You should be in bondage. You should be under tribute. That's another thing, that use tax on your land, that's a tribute tax. If you go back to the Hebrew and you look up the word for tribute, the slothful shall be under tribute. That actually refers to the use tax in a corvée system of statutory labor. You see, because you don't own your labor either. You don't own your land. You don't own your labor. You don't own your children. You're in bondage. Now, you can get some legal beagle to try to tell you, oh, you change your names all to, you know, from caps down to regular, and you do this, and you make out this paperwork, and then, wow, you'll be free. No, don't work that way. You're in bondage because you've been covetous. Because of your covetous practices, you've been made merchandise in your parents' covetous practices. They have cursed their children, that's you, and you're in bondage. Now, I'm going to tell you how to get out. You got to turn around, think differently, repent. You got to stop thinking about saving yourself, and you got to start caring about other people. Now, yeah, I know it's a little hard to care about everybody because there's so many jerks out there. You know, and that was one of the things I was getting. What's happened is because you kept looking to government to solve your problem, is this government has become this vast bureaucracy. This huge, vast bureaucracy. And it didn't just happen in the last couple of years. I mean, back in 1960, Supreme Court Justice said, we must realize that today's establishment is the new George III. Whether it will continue to adhere to its tactics, we do not know. If it does, the redress honored in tradition is also revolution. The truth is that the vast bureaucracy now runs this country, irrespective of what party is in power. So you're going to go elect somebody different and think you're going to change this? It's not going to change. They're in power. And they think differently than you do. Now, there's some good people in that bureaucracy, very few. I mean, if you go back to Woodrow Wilson, 52% of the people in Woodrow Wilson's cabinet had worked in the private sector. Real life business, private business experience. They weren't professional politicians. They were people who made a living, just like you and me. They weren't government people. They were real people that worked and had to make ends meet. And I pointed that out before, that, you know, in the real world, you've got to do the job and make it happen. 52% were that kind of person. Eisenhower, 57% were that kind of person. Reagan, 56%. George Bush, 51%. George W. Bush, 55%. I mean, almost all the presidents had, you know, 50% or somewhere in that vicinity, 48% or 49%. A few of them dropped down. Clinton dropped down to 39% were from private businesses. The rest were professional politicians. They knew the system. That's all they ever did, is work the system. But President Obama, 8%. The tide has turned. And then a lot of those are communists, socialists. And if you actually, you know, I could put up a chart board and show you, oh, well, this person, you know, your attorney general came from the same law practice that the old attorney general went back to. And they're all in together. But that's what should be expected, because power corrupts. And you've been giving them all this power because you've been asking them to do all these things for you. You want them to be your benefactor, even though you knew that everything they were going to give you, every little benefit, the fire department, the police department, all these things were going to come to you because they're going to take away from your neighbor. I don't feel the love. I don't see that you're loving your neighbor. I see you coveting your neighbor's goods so that you can have a comfortable, socially secure life. Yeah, but, you know, I mean, you got all your gadgets and your entertainment, and that's cool, you know. when somebody pulls the plug and you run out of food and start starving to death, guess what? Pharaoh ain't gonna love you anymore. People all probably hear about all the... I remember years ago, people were talking about these huge machines, nuclear-powered machines that were boring holes in the ground, you know, and people were saying, oh, that's ridiculous. They don't exist. That's just science fiction. That's just conspiracy theory stuff. You know, they don't have machines like that that bore these holes in the ground, miles under the ground, you know, boring away, creating these huge tunnels from one end of the country to the other. That doesn't exist. And then, of course, now they're so pervasive. They're so everywhere. You can actually download them drilling the holes on YouTube. I mean, before you just get a snapshot of one and somebody would say, oh, that was Photoshop. That's not real. Because it was a conspiracy. But then they dug the tunnel from Europe, from England to Europe. And Switzerland's been drilling holes all over the place. China's been drilling holes all over the place. They got networks from one end of the country to the other. They got huge stores of grain underground and food and freeze-dried food. And they've been stocking up for years. And they got these little cities all inland, all over the place that are just empty. You know, when I first heard about that, people said, oh, it's a conspiracy. They're just making that up. They photoshopped all the cars out of there and everything. And now you've had 60 minutes there interviewing the people. And there's nobody there. And the cities are just empty. But they're building them. I mean, they're interviewing the contractor. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's real. It's really happening. And, you know, they are moving Langley to Colorado. You know, and I know people who've been down in the tunnels. I know guys who work on the machines, work on those tunnelers. They're all over every place. You know, my next door neighbor works on one of those. He's a medical officer on one of those nuclear powered deals. You know, hey, it's real. They're doing it. They got subterranean tunnels all over the place and stocked with food. You can drive from Missouri to Maine with these things. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's real. Now, you probably can't drive, but people do drive. Big semis driving through these tunnels, paid for by tax dollars. And you're not invited to the party. And they go underground, most of you are going to die. Now, why are they doing it? Hey, you know, I don't know. You know, your guess is as good as mine. No, I do know, but I ain't telling you. There's no reason to, because it's just frightening you. There's no reason to. It's fear not. I mean, you know how many times it says fear not in the Bible? Because in the Bible, there's the instructions for your salvation. We're dealing with a multiple dimension shift in the universe. Happens all the time. It's not anything unusual, but it's gonna be pretty spectacular. You're gonna have a front row seat. Now, even if you don't believe that crazy little statement, you believe there might be something wrong with the economy. I mean, it's just a matter of statistics to look and see if there's something wrong with the food supply. You know, GMOs are gonna cause more starvation in this country than has ever been seen. More people are going to die of starvation because of GMOs. I mean, people are worried about the fact that they're unhealthy for you. And I agree that most of those GMO products are probably things that you should not put into your body. They're probably causing all kinds of stomach problems, digestive problems, everything else. Certainly there are animals that are becoming devitalized and sick and ill and cancerous from eating them. Sterile. That's another thing. They're becoming sterile. I mean, Europe's being invaded right now because Europe is sterile. But they're not sterile because of GMOs, because they've outlawed them. But something wants mankind to be sterile and wants mankind to die out in vast numbers. And it's going to happen. I don't know about tomorrow, the next day. I don't need to know. I need to know the way we should be going. And we're not going that way. And all you people who think you're Christian, you're not going that way. You're not doing what the first century church did. You're just not doing it. They were taking care of all the social welfare through faith, hope, and charity. There was plenty of welfare around that they could take from, the emperors and from Herod And all these guys, they had, I mean, half of Rome was on the government dole at times. They had universal health care for a while. They eventually were totally bankrupt and in debt, and leaders were stealing funds, you know, out of the coffers, and, you know, corruption was everywhere. You know, and I was just pointing out on the previous show that, you know, statistically speaking, 11 states? Yeah, 11 states now have more people on welfare than they have employed in the states. 11 states have more people on welfare than they have in the workforce. So that means more than half of the people are getting a government check. So when you go to the election, you think you're going to vote big government down? Lots of luck with that, because those are just the people on welfare. How many more people are receiving a government check because they're employed by the government? Well, you know what that means? We're getting down to like 20% of the people are actually producing something. How long is that economy going to last? Add that to the fact that you're in debt beyond any capacity to borrow money. The only way you're borrowing money is the Chinese and a few other countries are coming bidding on these treasury notes every time they come up. And sometimes they couldn't even get them, and the Federal Reserve had to bid on their own notes, which is like taking blood out of your right arm and putting it into your left arm. That's not going to work long. So why are the Chinese even buying these notes? Because your government is assuring to them that they can have a piece of the mineral pie of America. That's what's going on. I mean, go look at who's got all the big contracts in this rebuild of American infrastructure. Who's getting all those contracts? Are they bidding? Are they bidding against American contractors? Who's getting those? Are you being told in the news? There's certain things they just don't want you to know, but that it's there. And you can't do anything about it. You can go try to elect somebody, but I just told you, everybody's going to vote for big government. Because you've raised up a nation of socialists, of people who want to take a bite out of one another, selfish people. Now, I know there are good people out there. I know there are people out there that go to work, pay their taxes, and they don't really covet their neighbor's goods. They try to earn their own way, and they're hardworking. They got character. And I'm telling you all this not to make you mad, because you get mad, you're not going to be any good to me. You're not going to be good to anybody. You're not going to be any good to yourself. Getting mad is not the answer. Jesus didn't say, seek the kingdom of heaven and get real mad. He said, seek righteousness. Now, there are forces and powers in the universe you don't probably experience and see. But they're there. And you have to plug into those. And the only way you can plug into those is start becoming righteous. How do you become righteous? Start forgiving and giving. Come together. To serve one another. Not to feel good. Don't go to church to feel good. Don't go to church to ease your conscience or feel self-righteous. Go to church to serve one another. And to serve one another sometimes means to rebuke one another. Sometimes it means to do things that strengthen the needy of your community. Now, don't just get together with, you know, a small congregation where you scratch each other's back. Get together, make offerings to ministers who have a vision of what Christ was talking about. Because Christ set these Christians free. Moses set men free. He said, you guys got to think a different way. And they started thinking a different way and they got free. And they had to start thinking a different way during very hard times. Immediately after Pentecost, things got rougher and rougher and rougher throughout the Roman Empire. I mean, it took a couple hundred years for it to completely collapse, but in some areas it collapsed rather quickly. And we see the church sending people long distances with funds and supplies to help them out. Galatia sending to Corinth, and Corinth to Ephesus, and you know, they're helping each other out. They weren't just getting their own little clique. And help, because what happens is this comes through in waves, And so this part of the country gets hit really bad. You're gonna see the most massive human migrations in the United States and in Australia and Europe. Europe is going to be absolutely, totally devastated. This first invasion is nothing. You know, although, you know, like, what is that? We were talking about the statistics in Sweden in, what was it? How many months was it? 8 months or something? 1,000 girls were raped. And 300 of them were children. And they're not doing anything about it. Yeah, because they don't want to be considered racist. Are you crazy? The land of the Vikings? This is what socialism does. And it's affected you here in America. In Australia. Because you all are socialist nations. You've been a socialist nation since 1910. When most of the people were started to become educated in public schools. Before that, that wasn't the case. Most people, you know, and we talked about that. Just to remind you, you could have gone to Harvard and you didn't have to take out a student loan if you couldn't afford the tuition. When Harvard was started, you were guaranteed, it's in their bylaws, they had to let you in if you could keep up your grades, if you couldn't afford the tuition. But now you've got student loans so that you graduate and you're in debt and it doesn't go away with bankruptcy. And all it does is encourage, I mean, the colleges have been riding high on the hog because they got all these kids borrowing money to get this education. I tell you, if you didn't have student loans, the price of education would drop. Kids used to go get a summer job and save up their money so that they could pay their tuition through the school year. They can't do that anymore. Because the cost of education has skyrocketed way above the cost of living and the you know, what you could earn. And it's done that because of student loans and a number of other factors. But that's one of the major factors. And anyway, like I said, kids used to go to college if they could keep up the grades because people would pay their way because we were a philanthropic organization, society that cared about each other and we helped each other. People didn't die in the streets because they were old. I mean, occasionally it does happen. It happens today. But today, you've become the socialist nation. It's destroying you as a people. And you need to change. You need to repent. You need to turn around. You need to go the other way. And the other way is what Christ was talking about. And it's what we see the first century church doing. If the kingdom of God was within you, then we would see different fruit coming from the people. Especially from the people who say they're Christians and think they're saved. They simply would look and they, you know, I remember the first time I ever went into an unemployment office. I had been working and I had lived in California and I had some land in Wisconsin. I went back to the land in Wisconsin in the middle of winter. You know, I had a house there, didn't have running water. We had a pump, hand pump, and outhouse, but we could live in there. It had a wood stove and warm. And brought my wife and son and put them in the house, and I went looking for a job. And people said, well, go down to the unemployment service. Went down to the unemployment service and said, do you have a listing of jobs? Nope. We don't have any listing of jobs, but we can get you free money. I said, free money? What do you mean free money? He says, well, the government will give you some money because of the fact that you don't have a job. I said, why would they give me money? Because I don't have a job. Well, if you need help. I says, well, no, I've got some savings and everything. I'm not starving or anything. Yeah, but you don't have any income, so we can get you money. I says, well, I thought you guys, it says employment service. Don't you have any connections? There's nobody who wants help or anything. And I just left. I thought, like, this is crazy. You know, that all they wanted to do is talk about the money I was entitled to. Just begged me to take money. which is completely foreign to my thinking. But unfortunately, in America, it's not foreign to people's thinking. You know, during the Depression, when they first started this idea back in the 30s, this created depression that was artificially created because of the fact that you created this Federal Reserve Bank. That's who did this to you. And they've been jerking you on a chain ever since. But, you know, now again, remember, I'm not saying the Federal Reserve is the problem. I'm not saying that government is the problem. I'm saying you're the problem. Because you're not. And see, you could turn this around. And that's what we're going to talk about in the second half of the show. We're going to talk about how to turn this around. How to get back. What is the path to liberty? What is the revolutionary thing that judge of the Supreme Court was talking about? That is our redress and our honored tradition. Is he talking about shooting it up with guns? I don't know. He's dead now. That's William O. Douglas. But when we come back, I'm going to tell you what the real revolution is. The real revolutionary idea. We'll be right back. Hang in there. So I'm going to try to be a little bit more positive. I just came out swinging, I think coming out swinging is positive. but we're going to try to find a little bit of solution because we've been working on this for days. This is actually a part of what's already turning into a 9-part series. Start out with the Hammonds and the refuge people and what's really going on there. And everybody talks about it's a land grab. Well, the fact is all that land is surety for debt. It's for a debt that's grown beyond anything that you could ever pay. And I don't know even if you put on sackcloth like Nineveh that you could save things. It's coming down eventually. I mean, they'll prop it up. They're propping it up right now. That's what you see happening. Because all they're doing is borrowing more to prop it up. And they're borrowing from the guys who already know that the dollar's going to crash. But China didn't care the dollar crash. It's always repositioning itself. Germany is a little bit more vulnerable, but Europe is going away. Europe is going to be absolutely devastated and destroyed. I'm not talking about next year or anything, although it may not be that far away. I mean, you're gonna be seeing these things more and more and more. And already, if you had a good memory of what we were looking forward to back in the 90s or 80s, you would see that things are getting worse. They're not getting better. Some people are more comfortable, but it's kind of like a drunk, you know. As he drinks more, he thinks things are getting better. And they're not. But it feels better. And that's about what we're doing. So anyway, that's all turning around. That's all changing. And getting worse. Now you need to turn around and start doing the other thing. So what is the other thing? What did Moses do? What did Jesus do? What was the early church doing? Because Rome was already on its decline. Octavius had become Augustus Caesar, and so now the Republic was all but dead. Tiberius took over after him. Now he militarized the police so that, like, the Praetorian Guard, which was his secret service, FBI, kind of all rolled into one, were now becoming this militant operational thing, and people were afraid they could... They weren't walking around in fear all the time, but they knew not to step out of line because you could be targeted. And all that stuff is happening. I mean, you could watch Alex Jones for about an hour. That's all you're allowed. If you watch more than that, it may warp your mind. Alex serves his purpose. But the fact is what's the solution? You know, he's going to bust an artery one of these days. You know, I'm concerned about him. The solution is to get as wise as the serpent, but as harmless as doves. Another way I put this is you got to get as clever as an attorney, but as harmless as a saint. You know, get as smart as an attorney, but act like a saint. You have to be seeking the kingdom of God and his righteousness. Now, what that means is an alternative system that does not operate. You can't even think. It's been so long, you can't even think as a government, as a voluntary system. You just don't think. You think government, you think power. What if government, you're talking a government of the people, for the people, and by the people? You know, Abraham Lincoln wasn't the first one to say that. He was actually quoting the foreword to the Wycliffe Bible that said that this is the book for the government of the people, for the people, and by the people. It talks about the perfect law of liberty. It talks about government some 700 times. It talks about religion 5 times. And even when it talks about religion 4 times, it talks about it in a bad sense. 1 time it talks about it in a good sense. And that religion was how you take care of the needy of your society through faith, hope, and charity, unspotted by the force and control and manipulation of the world. So what they did, what you see Israel doing, what you see the Teutons doing, what you see all these nations who were free doing, was gathering together in 10 family congregations, which we call free assemblies. When we say congregation, we mean a free assembly. All you do is you just gather together. You know what 9 families, 10 families that you're going to gather with, and you gather with those families. And you help one another out, kind of like the people in the big fat Greek wedding. They, you know, do you need help at your business? Do you need help, you know, doing this? I mean, is somebody sick? Do you need some money? What do you need? And they're helping each other out. They're one big family, and that's what a congregation is. You know, you're all uncles. You're all brothers in that congregation. They're helping each other out. But that's not kingdom. So kingdom, you have to actually think about taking your extra resources and entrusting some of those. This is your taxes in the kingdom. But they're voluntary, see, because you want a free society. So they have to be voluntary. Nobody can exercise authority. Nobody can force you to contribute. You have to choose to contribute because you know that it's necessary that we have a big network of people that actually care about one another. In order to do that, you have to give to a minister, and that minister takes those funds and uses it for the benefit of the whole network. Somehow, he will, you know, if there's a fire over here, or there's a flood over here, or there's somebody in need over here, you go help them. Now, that principle is repeated over and over again in every congregation. And it can start very slow. You don't want to start, you know, writing $100,000 checks, even if you could. You know, I mean, we've turned down that money because it wasn't given in the right spirit. It was a good thing we did. Because that guy, well, I won't talk about that guy, ended up, he didn't listen to any of our advice, or he didn't listen to very much of it, and he got himself into a lot of trouble. Because he wasn't following the pattern. The pattern is love thy neighbor as thyself. So you want to give, but you want to give to those who will help strengthen the poor, the needy. And they don't have to be super poor. Chances are they're not. They're probably hardworking people. But this is only on a charity level that we're doing this. This is only, you know, taking care of absolute real needs that where families are drowning or in an emergency situation, you know. And that's what those funds are for. But what we're doing is through this network connection of charity is we're developing trust and fellowship and love for one another. I've told story after story how this works, and I could just fill up several hours telling stories about how this works. I've seen it work throughout. If you want to go back in history, it's just unbelievable. Where people just pick up everything and they come to your aid. This is why the Minutemen, this is what we were doing in America before the American Revolution. So people would drop everything and come to somebody else's aid at a moment's notice. And they had to, because it could be Indian attack, there could be floods, there could be fires. They had to drop everything and go help save their neighbor's home. That spirit's still alive in America, but we're out of shape. We're spiritually out of shape, and we're not organized. It said you had to be as wise as the serpent. So you got to get organized from the bottom up. I mean, you got these 3 percenters and was it Pacific Northwest Patriots or whatever they call themselves. They're getting organized. But they need to create the bonds of charity. That's how they need to get organized. They can't get organized because they're angry or because they're mad at the government. They got to realize that the reason this world is in trouble is because we didn't love one another. We didn't care about one another. I mean, what the heck? You think you're some kind of militia guy and you're still sending your kids to public school. So you're still asking the government to force your neighbor who doesn't have any kids in school to pay for your child's education. And somehow or other, you think that if you get together with march around in fatigues, that you're going to set this nation free. You do not have the spiritual backing that you need unless you actually start caring about one another. I know a lot of people aren't going to see that yet. You know, unless we go out and we start healing people and doing miracles in front of you, then you'll believe. But I'm not looking for the guys that need that. I'm looking for guys who get it. The reason we're in trouble is we didn't care about each other as much as we cared about ourselves, our ideas, our philosophy, our religious doctrines, whatever. And that when you come to any kind of disagreement, suddenly people are bailing out and leaving. Well, I'm not going to be with that guy because he doesn't agree with me. I mean, do you do that with your kids? Your kids talk back to you and so you take them out and throw them in the woods and leave them? You abandon them? Well, I'm not going to feed you kids anymore because you talk back to me. Yeah, I might send them to the room, but I'm not going to let them starve to death. I'm not going to abandon them. But your neighbor is not your kid. You got to treat them like you want to be treated. You got to love one another as Christ loved you. You have to be sacrificing and forgiving. And you have to create those bonds in peace times or they will not hold in hard times. Now, when hard times come, then you get to strengthen those bonds. But you got to start now in peace times. You have to start practicing caring about one another. And not just your little congregational club. You got to start caring about everybody. Christ, God so loved the whole world that he gave his only begotten son. You need to love the whole world and give. Now, I don't want you to give to the United Way. I don't want you to give to the Salvation Army. But you can, if that's what you want to do. I'm not going to tell you you can't. But I want you to start coming together in a network that actually cares about one another. And then I want you to be responsible enough to watch how your minister uses those funds. What is he doing with them? Do you see him doing any work with them? Do you see him doing any good with them? And you have to develop that personal relationship with him. And now, once you got those networks, we're going to take the next part and show you how this can prosper you. Now, I don't want you to prosper and become fat and lazy. I don't want you to prosper so you can become self-indulgent. I want you to prosper so you have more to give. That's right. Because that's how you invest in one another. And you don't have to always give to charity. You help each other. So in your congregation, somebody wants to start a business. You guys could get together. 10 families could get together. And you become, you know, I've said this before. The first time I heard about it was from somebody who had family from Korea. The poor people weren't let into the banks in Korea. They couldn't go in and borrow a small business loan in Korea because they were poor people. There's a class system. So they got together and they pooled their money and they helped each other start businesses. And they developed that work ethic. You know, so what you should be doing is helping each other, you know, whatever, buy a business. You know, a butcher. If somebody was a good butcher and he wanted to start a business and he was a hard worker and you cared about him, you got some kids growing up, get together and start a business with him. All be partners. He does the work and everything, but you do the investment partnership. Y'all get to see the books. You see how he's working, if he's doing a good job, if he's making money, if he needs help with advertisement, you could help him do that. You could tell all your friends, go to him, he's better. And then you help make him a success. And then he takes his extra money, now that he's becoming, and he helps invest in one of you who wants to start another business. Whatever it is. Now, it's getting late, so I'm not going to say that you should just start any business. You might want to think about businesses that are a little bit recession-proof. And there's lots of them out there. As a matter of fact, there, you know, discount grocery stores just boomed during hard times. You know, because everybody was looking, a lot of people who weren't looking for discounts before were now looking for discounts. So, and then you're in the grocery business, so suddenly you have this access to food and whatever. You know, if you're in a rural area, become a grain store, you know, a feed store. But start networking together, start caring about one another, and couple this with this charity. So that, it, you know, when you're going to see this all the time. People go into the doctor, people go into the hospital, and then when their insurance runs out, their money runs out, people dump them out. We had somebody here. Oh, he's going to die. We got to send him home. He's only got days. Might as well let him go home and die in peace. And unfortunately, they sent a county nurse there who wanted to drug him all the time. But when he wasn't taking the drugs, he kept living. And every day he would get up and he would talk and he would have enjoyable times. I come in, he would be sitting there with his wife. You know, he was in a wheelchair, but we'd get him up and put him in the wheelchair. He's sitting with his wife, they're holding hands and they're both asleep. They had a great time. Lived for, you know, 100 times longer than the doctors thought he was going to make it. So, and when he finally went, he went fairly quickly and peacefully. And he lived a ripe old age. And you know, he had video testimony and talked about the old times and how things were and all that kind of stuff. We shared it with people on the network. And that was because we had two ministers watching out for him on 24-hour call. And he got better. And we're not going to make him live to 100, but he lived a long time. Made it to another birthday or two. So, because, and we could have done better. We could have done way better if we had more help. But we did this. It was our personal sacrifice for somebody who we cared about. And that's what you need to develop. And this is how you create those bonds in a network. Now, our network is really spread out because there's a lot of people who just want the comfortable religion. They want the comfortable government. They want the regular benefits. And so they're not interested in something that actually requires you to take back your responsibility. But they're out there. They're the lost sheep that will hear the gospel of the kingdom. And we have to find them. And every one of them that we find and bring to the network, and they join in with congregations where they start caring about one another. They say, well, I'm busy, I got to do this. And Jesus talks about this. Oh, I got to do this, I got to go bury my dad, I got to go do this, and then I'll come. He calls those the dead. Let the dead bury the dead. That's the zombies. I mean, I'm shocked at the number of zombie shows that are evidently out there. We don't get any TV here. But I hear about them. I do see a Netflix now and then. But when somebody loans me one, because I don't spend money on that. We devote everything to trying to help people out. And you need to do that, because that's what's going to make you strong. That's what's going to bring you together as a nation within a nation. That's what you're going to need, those bonds of, I probably just triggered something as I misspoke. You're going to need those bonds of society that we've lost because we don't know our neighbor. We don't care about our neighbor. And I don't want you just caring about your congregation. You want to do outreach where you're going out and you're looking out in your community for those worthy people of charity. There's people who respond to the idea. It's a whole different kind of way of giving charity. It's a way in which you strengthen the poor. We don't even know how to do that anymore. But there is a way to do that. And I think if we practice it, we could do it more. But we need to build the network. And that's what we're going to be doing. We're going to be encouraging all the people that are in the network to form these congregations more and more. And if they don't do that, we're not going to waste time with it. Because anybody who doesn't want to come together and network like that, that's a contentious spirit. Now, they may not be trying to argue with you, but they're arguing with you indeed. We know that that's what the Teutons did. That's what the Moses did. That's what the Israelites did in the desert. That's how they made it, is they got together in a network of the tunes, of the tens, hundreds, and thousands. We know that's what they did in 300 AD as Rome was falling, and they would have these invading armies, and they would be able to, even before that, the Teutons did this, and they defeated 12,000 Teutons, was it, that defeated 15,000 seasoned troops. Defeated them to the man. Absolutely annihilated them. And with less armor, less equipment, less training, because they were organized in the tens, hundreds, and thousands. They were virtually invincible. Every time they got away from that. Why do you think we won the American Revolution? We were doing that back then. That's one of the best kept secrets in our history book. But what keeps those tens, hundreds, and thousands together? The fact that they're playing militia? Now, I don't want to pick on the guys who do that. I mean, some of them are noble hearts, and they're trying to do something. But you want the real bonds, the real band of brothers. You got to care about that man's kids. You got to care about his mother and his mother-in-law, even. You got to care about them. You got to create a system of charity that cares about them in every aspect of their lives. You got to be brothers to one another. You got to invest in one another. You do that on a charitable level through the church. That's what the church was doing. But the bonds that were created in this church service, which was not just a meeting, it was actual real service. The bonds that were created in that carried them through the battlefields against all odds. That in a quantum spiritual miraculous way. And that's where you got to go. That is the secret. And you can start that right now, and you don't necessarily have to get on an FBI watch list to do it, because you're just doing it. We're not interested in what church or religion or dogma or doctrine. We're interested in those who want to follow in the ways of Christ, who want to come in the name of Christ, who come to serve, not to be served, who come to care about one another, to lay down their life daily in the even if it's changing bedpans and putting people in wheelchairs and massaging their bed sores so that they heal up. Well, they were in the doctor's care, they got worse and worse. When they got into the church's care, they got better and better. But we're all going to face this, these hard times coming. We need to repent and do what that early church was doing. That's what they were doing. And it gave them strength. It gave them power. It gave them insight into what was coming. They had people in them that said, hey, guess what? We're going to have this great famine. And they told people about it. And because they were used to caring about one another, they prepared for it. Because they were willing to hear the whole truth. I mean, the spiritual journey is absolutely unbelievable. But you have to make that choice to start doing what Christ said to do. Start becoming a doer of the word. Because if you don't have the fruits of that doing, your faith is false and dead. Until next week, I wish peace upon your house. And may God be with you. God bless. Thank you.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.